are asking where to find the copy of the presentation, there are slides available, and those are available both for IBM internal as well as for business partners via the invitation. There's a couple of links in the invitation that will point to where those are. Before we get going, let me just introduce myself and go through a few preliminaries. My name is Dave Cannon, and I'm the Chief Architect for Tivoli Storage Manager. And what I'd like to do today is to just kind of describe the scope of what we're going to be covering. I'm going to be talking about data deduplication in general, and also more specifically how it will apply to Tivoli Storage Manager. This is not meant to be a competitive analysis presentation, so I'm not going to be comparing and contrasting TSM, for example, or deduplication in TSM with deduplication in other products, but I hope to give you enough information about what to look for in the various approaches and the pros and cons to deduplication that you can assist your customers in debunking some of the hype that is going on right now with regard to deduplication, and there is a lot. Furthermore, there will be some collateral that will be put out within the next couple days, and we'll say more about the location of that at the end of the presentation, but we'll be providing collateral to assist you in working with customers, both explaining deduplication in general and what will happen in TSM, as well as some competitive analysis materials. I'd like to point out that the contact person, if you have any further questions, will be Tricia Jung, and Tricia will come on at the end and we'll give her contact information, but please direct any follow-on questions to Tricia. She's in sales enablement, and that's her job, is to assist IBM sales teams and business partners with matters relating to sales. So she'll be your contact. And then I'll point out that we are going to be holding questions so we can get through the material, and at the end we'll open it up for any questions that you may have. This is scheduled actually for an hour, but I believe that we have the lines open for 90 minutes. And so we'll be able to go past the hour if necessary to answer any questions. Okay, with those introductory matters, let me go ahead and get started. I'll point out slides for those of you that have the presentation. Slide 2 is a standard disclaimer relating to Tivoli Storage Manager. And I have to point out that all of the things that I will be covering here related to TSM are in the future and as such are subject to change. So these represent IBM's best understanding of where we're going to go with deduplication in Tivoli Storage Manager, but of course that could change. I'll really be, to give you a reference point, the next release for Tivoli Storage Manager is TSM 5.5, which is scheduled for delivery next month in November, and I'll mostly be talking about items that relate to what we call the next release candidate. And what that means is that will be the next release after 5.5. The actual name of that release and the delivery for that release are both confidential, but I will point out confidentially that that the release is currently planned for 6.1, which is expected to be delivered right at the very end of 2008. So if you have customers that are under NDA with IBM, you can give them that information. Otherwise, please just refer to this as the next release. Now, I'd also like to point out that all of the information in this presentation is non-confidential. If there is something that is confidential, I will specifically point that out, such as the name of the next release and the GA date for that release. Hello, we've got somebody on the line that is supposed to be muted. Operator, we may need your help to... with that. Okay, let me go on to slide 3. This is just the topics that we expect to cover. First of all, I'm going to begin by going over deduplication technology in general, and this will give you some general background about deduplication and how it works. It's not specific to any particular product. And then after providing that background, we'll go into the second part of the presentation, which will talk about data reduction and deduplication in TSM, both what's available today and where we plan to go in the future. So let's go to slide 4, and slide 4 just gives some terminology. First, these are various terms relating to what we call data reduction, or reducing the amount of data that needs to be stored. And the first one is compression. I think everyone has a pretty good feel for what compression is. It's, It involves some kind of coding or encoding to reduce the amount of data, but typically that's very localized, so to a particular file, maybe to a directory. Now, there's another term called single instance store that's used in the industry, and this usually refers to identifying files that are identical within a large collection and only storing that identical file one time. And then other instances of the same file would reference the first one. And so that is a form of data reduction. I will point out that this is sometimes known as redundant file elimination. And the term for single instance store is not used very consistently. Sometimes single instance store is used interchangeably with data deduplication. But just recognize that single instance store is another term. And then data deduplication, which is what I'm going to be talking about, is also a form of compression. But the deduplication or the reduction of data occurs by eliminating redundant subfiles. So it's portions of files. Often those are referred to as chunks or blocks or extents. I will generally refer to them as chunks in this presentation. So a chunk is just a portion of a file that may be duplicated in other files. And the way this works is only one instance of each duplicate chunk is stored. So if we go on to slide 5, let's look at the basic concept of data deduplication. The basic idea here is that you have, in this example, there are three data sources. Data sources 1, 2, and 3. And each of them have data stored on each of those sources. And some of the data is unique to that particular data source, and some of the data is common. So in this example, the items that are gray are in gray are unique subfile for each, or unique subfiles for each source, but the ones in yellow are common. So if you look at subfile B, for example, it is stored twice on data source 1, and it's stored once on data source 3. But then when data gets stored to a target, each of those common chunks is stored only one time. And so we have a reduction in the total amount of data because of this deduplication. Now, if we go on to slide six shows in a little bit more detail how deduplication actually works. So the concept is that you have a data store, and on that data store are various chunks of data. The deduplicating system will go through and identify chunks by assigning a unique signature to each one of these chunks. And so what we see is we have two chunks with a signature C, and we have four chunks with signature A, and looks like three with signature B. Then the system will go through and compare the signatures to identify all the chunks that have the same signature. So we see, again, that two have C, signature C, and four have signature A, and so on. And then finally what the system will do is it will take those chunks that have the same signature, and it will only keep one of them. And then the other chunks with the same signature will simply reference the single stored chunk. So in this case, we have four chunks having signature A, and you'll see that A is stored only one time. The other chunks that have signature A will simply be a reference to the one stored chunk. Okay, so going on to slide 7 then, what is the value proposition for data deduplication? And there are several significant advantages. Probably the primary advantage is that deduplication offers the potential to reduce the amount of disk space that is used for storing a certain amount of data. Or looking at it differently, given a fixed amount of disk space, it's possible to store more data within that fixed amount of disk. Now, what that does then is it offers the potential to customers to be able to store data, most or all of their data on disk, and then be able to achieve improved recovery time objectives because data can be accessed on disk rather than coming from slower media such as tape. Additionally, with some implementations, it's possible to achieve some bandwidth savings because less data may have to be sent over the network. And then finally, there may be some reduced management costs because of data deduplication. For example, because less disk is required, there may be lower costs for cooling, for power, and so on. Now, so that sounds pretty good. There are some advantages, but as always, there are some disadvantages or limitations that have to be considered, some trade-offs. One of the main things is that data deduplication does not come for free. Clearly, there are CPU and I/O resources that are required, and those can be significant. Secondly, data deduplication might not be compatible with encryption, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But there may be some compromises where it's not possible to have both encryption and data deduplication. Another consideration is that data deduplication may increase the sensitivity to media failure. And what that means is if there is if a subfile or a chunk is being stored only one time, and then there are many other chunks referencing that one, loss of that one chunk due to media failure or some other problem could actually result in loss of many files rather than just a single file. And then the last point I'd like to make is that data deduplication really doesn't fit real well for storage of data on tape. And the main reason is by its very nature, data deduplication fragments data, and that's just fine on disk. But for tape, it may mean that in order to access data, it's necessary to mount many, many tapes. So that can be a disadvantage. Now, if we go on to slide 8, what I'd like to talk about now are some of the design considerations that relate to data deduplication. And I'm not talking here specifically about TSM, but I hope that as you become familiar with these design considerations, it will help you in working with your customer to recognize the different choices that can be made as IBM or any other vendor designs a deduplication solution. And I'd like to point out that there are a lot of trade-offs involved with these. It's very possible that you'll run into vendors who claim that their solution is the ultimately best solution, and it is the only, you know, right solution, and that just isn't true. There are a lot of design decisions that can be made, and there are pros and cons of each one. So for any given customer situation, there might be one solution that fits best, but be cautious about hearing from vendors who claim that theirs is the only right way or the only best way to do deduplication, because that's more hype than it is fact. So if we go on now to slide 8, slide 8 talks about the first design question or point, which is where the deduplication is performed. And deduplication can be performed either on the source side or it can be performed on the target side. If you're thinking in terms of a client-server implementation, then those would correspond to client and server side, respectively. So if we look at source side, it has several advantages. First of all, deduplication is performed before or could be performed before data is sent, and so that may conserve network bandwidth. It may also be possible, though not necessarily so, it may be possible that the source or the client is more aware of data usage, the format, and may be able to do a more effective job of data reduction than could be performed on the target. And then finally, by putting the processing, the deduplication processing on the source, it may facilitate scale out. So you may have many, many sources, and the processing is spread over those, which may improve scalability. Now, on the downside, if you look at the downsides of source-side deduplication, by putting the deduplication on the source, that source is very often a file server or an application server. So that could impact the performance of that server. Next, a pretty big disadvantage is that this requires deployment of some kind of software at every one of the sources. So if you're dealing with thousands of sources and have to put software at each one of those, that can be quite a big job to deploy all that software and keep it current. And then finally, and I'm not going to really go into this, but it is possible, if depending on the design for deduplication, that putting the deduplication on the source may expose the possibility of some kind of a security attack via spoofing. Now, if we look at target-side deduplication, in contrast, advantages are that there's no deployment of client software at endpoints, and it may be possible to have a direct comparison to confirm duplicates. So as data comes in, there may be a byte-by-byte comparison with data that's already stored to make sure that the data truly is duplicate. Now, on the disadvantage side, though, deduplication does consume CPU cycles on the target server or the storage device, and that may be a problem. And it is also because deduplication doesn't occur until data gets to the source, it's possible that the data gets sent to the target and then actually just gets discarded because it's duplicate. Now let's look on slide 10 then at some alternatives in terms of when the deduplication is performed. This can be done what's called in-band, which means as the data is being, typically as it's being processed or sent from the source to the target, deduplication would take place as part of that. Contrast that with out-of-band, which is after the fact. So after the data has been stored on the target, then it would be deduplicated. The advantages of in-band are that it gives immediate data reduction. So the data doesn't have to be stored for some period of time and then deduplicated. So there's one step, and it also reduces the amount of storage. On the disadvantage side, though, this can be a bottleneck during data ingestion at the target. So if we're talking about a backup, for example, it may make it harder to meet backup windows. Also, it's much more difficult or impossible to achieve parallelism. So if there's one I/O stream, then there's only going to be one deduplication stream. And so it reduces the amount of flexibility. And then finally, in-band deduplication does not allow for deduplication of data that has already been stored on the target. Now, looking at out-of-band, some of the advantages then are that there is no impact to data ingestion because it takes place after the fact. And it allows for deduplication of legacy data and also allows for parallelism, so the data can be ingested, stored, and then there can be multiple processes all performing the deduplication. On the disadvantage side, though, data does have to be processed twice, once during ingestion and a second time for the deduplication, and some additional storage may be needed to hold data temporarily until it can be deduplicated. Okay, let's go on to slide 11. Slide 11 talks about some generalized deduplication processing. And the first step is that a data object is divided into chunks. We'll go into later how that might be done, but there's some way of dividing the data up into chunks or subfiles. The next thing that occurs is that duplicate chunks are identified, and that's typically done by assigning a hash or a unique identifier to each chunk and then comparing that hash with values that are already stored in some kind of an index to find out whether that chunk or whether that identifier is already known to the index. And by index, that could be a flat file, it could be a database or whatever. And then finally, once the redundant chunks have been eliminated, the index gets updated so that any redundant items now point to those same items that are already stored in the system. And at that point, space can be deallocated for the redundant chunks. So that's the generalized processing that takes place for deduplication. What we'll do now is we'll go through each of those steps in a little bit more detail. On slide 12, slide 12 shows various means of data chunking. And these go, if you start at the list at the top, these go from those methods that have the lowest overhead in terms of CPU and I/O and the space required for indexing to the bottom where the overhead is greatest, but there's also the greatest possibility for data reduction. So beginning at the top, one possibility is simply whole file chunking. And this corresponds to the single instance store that I talked about earlier, where data is regarded as being redundant only if the entire file is the same. The advantage of this is it's very simple, it has low overhead, but obviously the deduplication won't be as significant as if deduplication is performed at a more granular level. Now the next method is fixed size chunking. And in this, chunk boundaries are set at exact intervals, the very precise intervals that are where each interval is exactly the same. And so that, again, is pretty simple. But the disadvantage is that if there's, say, a change of one byte, even at the beginning of the object, either because something gets inserted or it gets deleted or whatever, then any data after that one change may not be recognized as being duplicate because all the offsets are shifted. So that's a pretty significant disadvantage to fixed size chunking. Now, going a step further then, variable size chunking can be used. And variable size chunking has chunks, obviously, of different sizes, so not all chunks are the same. And the advantage of that is that if there is a small change, even as small as one byte near the beginning of the file, yes, everything else after that will be offset, but because the chunks are variable, the system should still be able to detect that bytes near the, you know, after the one changed byte are still redundant. So in other words, if somebody has a PowerPoint file and they insert one extra character or an extra bullet or whatever it may be, after some point, the system would be able to recognize that the remainder of the file is still identical and should be able to deduplicate it. Often variable size chunking is referred to as fingerprinting, and I may use that term from time to time. For example, one well-known method is what's called Rabin fingerprinting. And then the last method here can be used in combination, say, with variable size chunking, but this takes chunking a step further, and instead of just creating chunks without regard for the data, it actually considers the data format and the structure of the data. So as an example, one thing that's pretty common is for deduplicating systems to be aware of the backup stream and how that data gets formatted, and they can take that into account in deduplicating. As another example, you might consider that there could hypothetically be a deduplication system in which PowerPoint slides are deduplicated, and instead of just, and it would actually be aware of those slide boundaries, and that way if one slide changed, that would not affect any subsequent slides. Let's go on to slide 13 now. Slide 13 talks about how redundant chunks are identified. Typically, this is done by assigning a unique identifier to each chunk. And that's usually done by using some kind of a hash function. What a hash function is just a small piece of code that essentially takes as input a string of data and outputs a digest that corresponds to that piece of data. So common hash functions are MD5 and a family of algorithms called the SHA hash algorithms. Now, for each chunk, this identifier is compared against an index to determine whether the chunk is already there. So what hash should be used? There are a lot of different hashes, and there's some trade-offs involved in determining which hash to use. First of all, one of them is processing time. The stronger the hash, the more processing is required to compute the hash values, and the more index space will be used to store those values. On the other hand, by going to a stronger hash, we reduce the risk of false matches. And on the next slide, we'll talk about false matches. On slide 14, anytime there is a hash involved, there is a possibility, albeit perhaps a very, very, very small possibility, that you could have two different chunks of data that are different, but they hash to the same value. And should that occur, that is called a hash collision. In a deduplicating system, if that should occur, it's possible that the system may treat two different pieces of data as being identical, and when in fact they're not, and that could result in data loss. So that sounds pretty serious, but let's look a little bit closer at that. The probability of a collision can be calculated mathematically, and that's based really on two pieces of input. The first is the number of unique identifiers, and secondly, the number of chunks in the data store. Well, and those can be controlled by design. So the longer the digest, the more unique identifiers there are, and therefore the lower probability of collisions. On the other hand, the more chunks that are stored in the system, there will be a higher probability of collisions. So by knowing these two things, the number of unique identifiers and the number of chunks, it's possible to calculate the probability of collision. and then one can design around that. So there are several approaches that can be taken to reduce the risk of data loss due to collisions. First of all, the stronger the hash function, or in other words, the longer the digest, then that increases the number of unique identifiers and greatly reduces the probability of collisions. It's also possible to combine values from multiple hash functions. So, you know, maybe there is a very, very small chance that two different chunks can have the same hash, let's say the same SHA-1 hash, but the probability that they would have the same SHA-1 and the same MD5 hash becomes extremely small. So it's possible to combine multiple hashes. It's also possible to combine the hash value with other information about the chunk, such as the size of the chunk. And then the chances that two chunks would have the same hash value and the same size or the same other data becomes very, very small. And then finally, it's possible to perform a bytewise comparison of chunks to really confirm that they're the same, but of course there is quite a bit of overhead in doing that. Now if we move on to slide 15, slide 15 shows some example hash functions and provides some information about each one. And as we go from the top of the list to the bottom of the list, the hashes become stronger. What that means is that the hash value is longer and the probability of collisions becomes lower as we go from MD5, which is the first item in the list, down to, say, SHA-512 or Whirlpool. So this chart then shows the output size L, and L is basically the length of the digest in bits. It also shows performance, and you see, obviously, as the as the hash function gets stronger, there is more processing involved. So stronger hashes involve additional processing. Now, what begins to get interesting is the probabilities of collision. So the fourth column shows how many chunks would have to be stored in order to have a 50% chance of collision. With an MD5, you'd have to have 2 to the 20th chunks stored, and that's an awful lot of chunks. But if you go down the table, say to a SHA-256, now that number goes up to 10 to the 40th, which is a very, very large number of chunks that would have to be stored. Looking at the fifth column, it looks at this a little differently, and it says, what is the chance, just taken as an example, let's suppose there's 40 petabytes of data that's stored, and the chunk size is 4 kilobytes. And those numbers are just somewhat arbitrary. But what is the chance of a hash collision? Well, with MD5, that probability is 10 to the minus 20th, a very, very small number. If you go down to, say, SHA-256, that gets to a much smaller number, which is 10 to the minus 60th. And just as reference, the probability for a hard drive error is about 10 to the minus 14th. So we're looking here at very, very small probabilities. And I believe the probability of an undetected hard drive error is somewhere in the order of 10 to the minus 23rd or so, as I recall. So very, very small probabilities here. Now let's go on to slide 16. And slide 16 shows then what happens after the redundant chunks are identified. The next step then would be to create an update in an index that shows that a particular chunk is identical to an existing chunk, and there would be a reference to the existing chunk. Also, there would typically be some kind of information about how to reconstruct an object. So it would show that in order to reconstruct a particular file, it would be necessary to pull in, say, 50 different chunks from different places. And so there would be something in the index showing how to reconstruct that object. And then finally, after these updates have been made to the index, then it's possible to deallocate any space that is no longer needed because it is redundant. Now, at this point, I'd like to make some comments about this index. I've mentioned the index several times. Again, it can be a database as an example. But deduplication is no better than the index that is used. Without that index, essentially, deduplication is nothing but a bunch of bits in a bit bucket, and so it's not possible to get data back. And so it's very important that the index be chosen very carefully in several regards. First of all, with regard to integrity, it's very important that the values in the index be correct, that they be consistent with any other information stored about the data. Obviously, it has to perform well, and it has to scale well if you're looking at a production kind of deduplication system. And very importantly, and I probably can't emphasize this enough, there has to be protection for the index. So if there is an index that does not have a very secure means of protection, That entire, all the data stored in that deduplicating system is at risk. If there should be a system crash or a media failure or a disaster or anything that should occur to cause the index to be lost, it doesn't matter what's stored, that data is not going to be usable without the index. Let's go on to slide 17. Slide 17 talks about something called deduplication ratios. And this gives a measure of the degree of compression due to deduplication. And so the idea is that let's say there's 50 or 500 terabytes of data, and through deduplication that can be reduced to 100 terabytes, then we would say there's a deduplication ratio of 5 to 1. Now, you will see in the literature some enormous ranges in terms of deduplication ratios. We've seen numbers ranging from probably at least 20 to 1 on up to as much as 500 to 1. And I want to caution right from the outset that there is an awful lot of hype associated with this. Many of these claims, I believe, are really not feasible in a production environment for most data. There seems like there's a war going on to escalate these numbers and make them as large as possible. And I do get concerned that customers may have an unrealistic expectation in terms of what they're going to get. So let me point out that these ratios really reflect design trade-offs. Yes, it's possible to make the numbers be larger, but there are costs involved in doing that. So there may be performance costs, as an example. But perhaps more importantly, the actual ratio is highly dependent on a lot of variables. So it depends on, for any given source, how much redundancy is there, how fast is the data changing, and how long is the data being stored. So that will have a great impact on the deduplication ratio. Second of all, how many different sources are there and how different are there? There is more opportunity for deduplication if there are 1,000 machines being backed up to a single target and they have a great deal of redundant data. There is much more opportunity for redundancy there than if only 5 machines are being backed up to that same target. A very important matter also is what is the backup methodology if we're talking about deduplication in the context of backup. For example, TSM uses a methodology called incremental forever or progressive incremental. There is much less redundancy to start with such a backup methodology, and so less opportunity for deduplication to reduce the amount of data as compared with, say, a full plus incremental or a full plus differential system. So if you're dealing with a customer who is looking at a deduplication system, perhaps in combination with TSM, one of the first questions to ask would be, any data coming from the vendor, is that with TSM data, and what kind of data was it? And then finally, encryption can have a bearing. We mentioned before that encryption and deduplication may not be compatible, and so if a client is using encryption, that may greatly reduce the deduplication ratio. So the final message I want to give here is beware of the numbers. Try to get in them or inside them, underneath them, and understand them because there is a great deal of hype going on here. Finally, on slide 18, I'd like to say a little bit about deduplication and encryption. I've mentioned this before. Let's say that there are 3 data sources 1, 2, and 3, and each of them have a piece of data that's identical. It's basically a piece of text data that says important text, and that data is stored on each of the sources. Then the data from source 1 is not encrypted but is sent to the deduplication system. The data on source 2 is encrypted with key 1, and the data on source 3 is encrypted with a second key called key 2. So after that step, each of the pieces of data look different, even though they started out the same. When they go to the deduplication system will look at these and will not recognize that there is any redundancy because they are all different. And so even though these pieces of data all started out the same, they will be stored without any data reduction in the data store. Okay, going on to slide 19 now, that brings us to the end of the general introduction to deduplication. What I'd like to do now is talk about data reduction and deduplication in TSM. So on slide 20, slide 20 shows existing methods for data reduction in TSN today. We'll begin on the left-hand side, which talks about client compression in the upper left-hand corner. And I think all are familiar with this. Basically, this means that the client can compress data before it gets sent to the TSN server, and this has the advantage of reducing network bandwidth as well as server storage. Also, there is subfile backup, which is available for Windows Backup Archive clients. And with subfile backup, only the changed portions of files are transmitted. So if a file, let's say a PowerPoint presentation, is just a small portion of that is changed, only the changed portion would be sent from the client to the server. And this also has the advantage of conserving network bandwidth as well as server storage. The next method I'll mention is incremental forever, which I've touched on before. This is also known as progressive incremental. And with that methodology, and this is really the primary methodology used for backup of file systems using TSM, and with this, once the file is initially backed up, it never needs to be backed up again unless the file is somehow changed. And, of course, that greatly reduces the network bandwidth and the server storage required as compared to methods that involve periodic full backups. Now, in addition to these methods that are available natively within TSM, there's also the possibility to achieve data reduction in the storage device. So this can occur via device compression. For example, a tape device that has compression will reduce data. And there are also appliances that perform deduplication. So, for example, there are VTLs, there are NAS devices that allow deduplication. And if those are being used as a device in the TSM storage hierarchy, then that would achieve the benefits of deduplication. And that would conserve server storage. Of course, it would not reduce the bandwidth usage. So going on to slide 21, there are already methods for data reduction in TSM today. So what is the importance of data deduplication? As we pointed out, incremental forever or progressive incremental does reduce the amount of redundancy. There will be less opportunity for data reduction via deduplication in TSM as compared to what would occur with other backup products. That said, we still believe that data deduplication is very important for TSM, and we're working toward delivering that capability in the next release after 5.5. And from the remainder of this presentation, we'll focus on what that deduplication solution will be. Going on to slide 22, this shows an overview of the deduplication implementation that will appear in the next release. And I want to point out right now that we view this as the first step toward a complete deduplication solution. We believe this is the right first step to take, but hopefully there will be follow-on steps in subsequent releases. So the way this will work in the next release is that client data, let's say we have three clients 1, 2, and 3, and they all have files. We'll call those files A, B, and C, and those files have some common data. During a backup or an archive operation or even an HSM migration, data for all these files would be sent to the TSM server, but the server would then recognize which portions of files are redundant, and it would store a reference, or a database reference for files A, B, and C, but for data that is stored on disk, and specifically sequential access disk, each chunk would only be stored one time. And so if, let's say, A and B both have common data, then and they share the same chunk, then that chunk would be stored one time, and A and B would both reference that same chunk in disk storage. Now, in contrast, for any data that is stored on tape, each file stored on tape will be stored in its entirety without any data deduplication. And that gets back to the point that I made earlier, which is that data deduplication may not be very compatible with tape because, by its nature, it fragments data. And so if all the common chunks were only stored one time, in order to perform a restore, it might be necessary to mount 20, 30, 50 tapes in order to get to all the chunks. And so while there is some interest in having deduplication in tape storage, that will not be something that will be supported in the initial implementation. So if there's a storage pool backup to tape or a let's say a migration to tape or whatever, the data would be stored in its complete form rather than in deduplicated form. Okay, let's move on to slide 23 then. Slide 23 goes over some of the major design points for the initial TSM deduplication solution. I've talked about a lot of the concepts and the design decisions, and so this should make more sense now with that background. Deduplication in TSM will initially be performed server-side. What that does is it means that there will be no need to deploy special client software. One could continue to use, say, a 5.5 client and still be able to realize the benefits of deduplication simply by going to a server with the appropriate level. And also, it will mean that data deduplication will work for all kinds of data. So it will be able to work for backup data, archive data, HSM data, data from a database, or whatever, because the deduplication takes place on the server irrespective of the actual client that sent the data. Deduplication will also be performed out of band, meaning that it won't be in line with the actual backup or archive. It will take place after the fact. One of the big advantages of this is that it allows for deduplication of legacy data. So if a customer has stored data, let's say, a year ago, by moving that data into a deduplicating sequential access disk storage pool, then it will be possible for that data to become deduplicated. Also, by doing this out of band, it minimizes the impact to backup windows, and it allows concurrent processing to identify duplicate data. Now, I've pointed out that one of the most important things about deduplication is the index and how robust the index is. TSM, in the same release that deduplication is introduced, TSM will also be replacing its current proprietary database with DB2. And by using DB2, and the index for deduplication will be that DB2 server. It will be the DB2 database. So the TSM server's database will be used as the deduplication index. What that means is that there will be transactional integrity, so that any data that goes into that index will be stored transactionally. So if a transaction succeeds, everything succeeds. If it rolls back, everything is rolled back. It will be highly scalable and should perform very well because this is a production ready database. And finally, disaster protection will be very strong and will be the same as would be achieved for anything else that gets stored in the database. So the same database backup and other methodologies that are used to protect the TSM database would also protect the index. And that's something that should be a strength of TSM's solution. TSM will use variable size chunking. And specifically, we plan to use the Raven fingerprinting method. But we'll also go a little further in that there will be awareness of the TSM data format. So the deduplication should be very good. If somebody inserts a byte or deletes a byte at the beginning of a file, it should still be possible to deduplicate the latter parts of that file. As far as the hash method that's used, we expect at this time that we'll probably be using SHA-1 or SHA-256. The trade-offs there are that SHA-256 gives longer identifiers, which reduces the probability of a hash collision, but it does mean that there will be more processing and more database usage. The average chunk size is probably not really important to know. We haven't decided that yet. Again, there are some trade-offs. The larger, if chunk sizes on the average are larger, then that will reduce the total number of chunks and thereby reduce the collision probability, but it will also somewhat reduce the degree of compression that's achieved. Now, how does the last line on slide 23 points out how space is actually recovered, that is occupied by redundant chunks, and that will take place during reclamation processing. I've mentioned a couple times that deduplication will be for sequential access disks, and so then as a part of reclamation processing, any space occupied by redundant chunks will be eliminated. And I want to point out that there is really an advantage of doing that in this manner, in that by having space reduction for duplicate chunks, by combining that with reclamation, we can really achieve in one reclamation operation two different effects. One is that we can recover space occupied by deleted files, what's done today, but we can also recover space occupied by redundant chunks. And I won't go into details on it, but having those two separately, there are some situations where those two can actually work against each other. So by putting them under TSM and having TSM be aware of both kinds of space recovery, we think there are some advantages.